Hey guys, what is going on? We are in the zone. This is episode 162 today. To start it off, we're going to talk about the very, very, very close, entertaining NBA MVP award race because, man, Aulino, there are a lot of great, great individuals this year, listing guys like Giannis, Jokic, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James is looking outstanding. And another guy that we all know and love very, very well, DeMar DeRozan. So I'm going to start with some of those names. Who do you think, as of right now, is your front runner to win the MVP? And why is that?
Yeah, for a sentimental favorite here, you know, I'm going to go DeMar DeRozan. I think he deserves it. Ever since he went to Chicago and just turned the whole culture around there, and the season he's had, those game winners, just the way he's been able to lead, I think DeMar deserves it for all that. But kind of like going away from the heart pick there and going to my head, I think. And recording.
Hey guys, what is going on? We are in the zone. This is episode 162 today. To start it off, we're going to talk about the very, very, very close, entertaining NBA MVP award race because, man, Aulino, there are a lot of great, great individuals this year, listing guys like Giannis, Jokic, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James is looking outstanding. And another guy that we all know and love very, very well, DeMar DeRozan. So I'm going to start with some of those names. Who do you think, as of right now, is your front runner to win the MVP? And why is that?
Yeah, for a sentimental favorite here, you know, I'm going to go DeMar DeRozan. I think he deserves it. Ever since he went to Chicago and just turned the whole culture around there, and the season he's had, those game winners, just the way he's been able to lead, I think DeMar deserves it for all that. But kind of like going away from the heart pick there and going to my head, I think KD might win it at the end of the season. He's been on another level, carrying Brooklyn, and especially with Kyrie out, him and Harden have had to like take the most of that load there offensively, and KD's been a good leader. So I think KD will get the votes from the committee there that selects it, but I'd love to see DeMar DeRozan get an MVP.
You know what? I agree there a lot. I think DeRozan, after what a lot of fans and what Bleacher Report specifically were saying about the DeRozan signing and how this could turn really ugly really fast in Chicago, has literally turned into the opposite light, where it's the best thing going. They're 27-12. They're in first in the Eastern Conference, man. Like, they're rolling. And I just like looking at the way he played back in Toronto, it's looking like the same thing in Chicago. He's got that confidence back. He's on a contender. Whereas, you know, even in San Antonio, like, he was underrated. A lot of fans, they didn't really appreciate him as much because they were always 12th, 13th in the West. But man, like, DeRozan, he deserves all the roses here. Like, he's getting praised like Derrick Rose was in 2010. I mean, I don't think DeRozan's going to get it, obviously. I think guys like KD, Curry, and Giannis are ahead of him in terms of the voting right now. But, man, I got to love me, like, DeRozan and even Ja Morant, man. Like, they have 30 wins, Memphis. And last year they were the ninth seed in the play-in. So, like, even Ja Morant, man, like, a lot of people don't really talk about him because it's only his third year in the league. But he's already looking like an MVP type of guy. Where do you think Ja Morant can lead Memphis this year? Because, man, like I said, they're 30-14. I think they're third in the West. Do we take Ja Morant and the Grizzlies a little more seriously, or do you think this is just a bit of a hot streak? Because they've won 11 in a row now.
Yeah, I love Ja Morant. He's a beast. And we saw when he stared down that little kid in the stands, and then he felt bad a little bit after. He's like, yeah, don't worry. We'll take care of them when they come back. But, like, I think they're just one trade away. Like, I know the JV trade, they're getting more of a defensive player back, but I think they need to make one more big trade, and whether it's going out and maybe going to Philly and taking a gamble on Ben Simmons and bringing him as a number four there, and you can have Ja Morant still carry the load as a point. Maybe that is what turns him around and gets some more respect, another defensive guy like that. But I just think Ja Morant is he's close in the conversation. I don't think he'll be there yet. Like, I think DeMar, what he had to do in Chicago just got him in the conversation. I think John Morant's probably a couple years away for fans and like media members to really put him in that category with like a KD and stuff for MVP.
Yeah, well, Kevin Durant, man, to me, easily right now is probably a little more surprising than LeBron James in terms of production. Like LeBron, we know he's going to bring it every single game. Now that Anthony Davis is injured, he's going to get more touches. He's been getting 30 points almost on the regular since he went down with the injury, AD. So LeBron's been rolling in terms of production. It's year 19 for him. When I think of Kevin Durant, man, like he's got to share the rock with James Harden a lot of the time. And James Harden went from being leading the league every year in scoring to now being like one of the best third options in NBA history. So what we've seen from Kevin Durant, man, coming off of a terrible injury, he's averaging like 27-7-6, which is absolutely, it's just ridiculous, man. Like guys, like when you're 7 feet tall and you tear your Achilles and you tear your ACL, like these injuries in your knees, like it's going to affect you, especially when you're that tall. But as athletically gifted as Kevin Durant is, man, he's proving it. Like he comes back from a scary injury and immediately right back in the MVP conversation. He's actually averaging more than when he did on Golden State those years ago when he won the chip. So I think Kevin Durant is the MVP right now just based on the story that and the recovery period he's had to go through. Another name that I quickly want to talk about because, man, like, are we – I got to ask this question, Alino. Are we sleeping on Giannis getting another MVP? Because, god damn, man, he's only playing 32 minutes and he's averaging 28.5 points per game. Like, does Giannis steal this one from maybe Kevin Durant? Or do you think the NBA association, they're going to specifically maybe – not let Giannis win it this year?
I think it's probably the best thing for Giannis. He'll go under the radar a little bit. Already plays in Milwaukee, so everyone's already focused on Brooklyn and KD and the names there with Harden. But like, I think eventually when they go back to the playoffs, they might have that rematch from last year, and I think Giannis will take advantage of all the talk not being on him. Going under the radar as a guy who's, like you're saying, 28 points, and he's only playing 32 minutes, so he's going to be ready and prepared come playoff time. So I think he's going to be looking more towards a finals MVP, and that could be scary for the Eastern Conference.
It's just, Alino, there's not a lot of games that could change the tide in terms of an MVP conversation, but I don't know if you watched last night's game between the Bucks and the Warriors. Like, Giannis had 23 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists at halftime. Curry had, I think, 5 points at halftime. So I feel like there's not a lot of games that like really switch the MVP conversation, but I think if there is a game, it might have been last night. And I think Giannis, the way that he's kind of going right now and he's just blowing by everybody in terms of production, I think Giannis, man, he might win his third MVP already at the age of 27, 28 years old. Like, this guy has to be the new LeBron of the NBA. If he doesn't get hurt and he stays consistent and he stays healthy, Giannis can have a really long career. So, I mean, another guy too, Alino, because we got to talk about all these unbelievable MVP players, like Nikola Jokic. Now, last year he was the MVP. He was rolling. He was doing everything correct. You know, Jamal Murray having that serious injury. Now Michael Porter Jr. is done for the year. Like, Jokic, like, Denver's battled injuries. They're 21-19. But Jokic is still putting up mega numbers. He's shooting over 50% from the field, averaging about 25-7-14. So, or is 25-14 rebounds, 7 assists, something like that. Like, does Jokic not get enough love either? But like, because I feel like if Jokic is not on that team and he's not on that Denver team, they're a bottom 5 team in the league, no doubt about it. So I think the fact that they're 21-19 without Jamal Murray, without Michael Porter Jr., and even Aaron Gordon, I'm pretty sure, has missed a couple games. Like, does Jokic have a case too? Because a lot of people are really wanting Jokic to win the back-to-back MVP.
Yeah, I think he doesn't get a lot of respect just because of where they are right now. Like, it's going to be tough for them because Jamal Murray and Jokic, that duo, what they were able to do in the bubble, I think if they had another year, would have been even better. And then look at this year. This is probably a year they could have been championship contenders. So I think he's had to do so much more that people forget, like, how good they were, like, 2 years ago almost. So I think it's unfortunate for him, but Yeah, I think his name's going to be out of the mix there. Just when you look at what KD's doing off an injury, and you're looking at Curry, like Golden State, it looks like they're back to where they were when they had that 72-win season. So I think they'll probably take that into account more. But Jokic is definitely a guy that you look at as a best center in the league.
Absolutely, I agree with that. You know, I want to move on to the NHL now because they did announce the All-Star Game rosters. And let me tell you, Alino, I don't know if you saw all the names and the rosters, but are you as disappointed as I am with some of the names? I know every player has to, every team has to have a player representing, but do you think that they now have to change that rule after looking at these rosters?
Yeah, I think they do. And I, like, even the divisional thing, I'm not too crazy about that. Like, I get they want to do a tournament, but if you're doing like 3-on-3 hockey or 4-on-4, whatever the hell they're doing, like, you're not really selling your game, because someone who's watching the All-Star game for the first time, they're going to be surprised when they actually tune into a game and they see it's 5-on-5 with a goalie. So, like, I think they need to change it up. Maybe do like divisional playoffs, like type of thing where you have 5-on-5, like get more like people invested in it. I just don't see it working. And I think out of all the All-Star games, I think the NHL is probably like the one players don't even want to be on. Like, you look at the NBA, it looks like a slap in the face of some players when they're not even included in the mix there. And they have more riding on it for their marketing of their career. So, yeah, I'm not too crazy about the NHL All-Star.
Now, I mean, like, I know, like, we're not going to be here that long today, but I do want to quickly kind of go through the rosters. And I want to talk about what each player has kind of brought to the team. I don't want to go through each player, obviously, but, like, the names that kind of stuck out to you that kind of made the roster. So I'm going to start with the Metro Division. So obviously Ovechkin's the captain. Guy's been rolling. He looks like he's 25 years old. He's the captain. Sebastian Aho, now, here's a guy where he's kind of flown under the radar the last year and a half, I think. Like, hasn't really, a lot of people haven't been talking about him that much. He's still an elite, a very elite center in this league. But do you think maybe Sidney Crosby should have got it over a guy like Sebastian Aho, or do you think Aho is the right choice here?
Yeah, I think if you're Gary Bettman, you should just put Crosby in regardless, make a commissioner pick. I think you should just, like, I know Aho's had a nice little year there, like Carolina's rolling, but, like, I don't know. I think Crosby needs to be in it regardless. Like, even if it's not fan voting, he should be a guy they still put in the All-Star game, because he's a one that a lot of fans know. He hasn't really tailed off his performance, so, like, Crosby should be there. Even looking at a guy like on the Western Conference, like Kadri, the year he's had, it's crazy he's not there. Phil Kessel, I think, is a borderline All-Star with the shit team he's on, but, like, there's so many guys that you would think would be in the All-Star game that fans would want to actually see, and because of this rule where you have to have one player on each team, and sometimes that team who their representative is there isn't even the best player, so it's kind of crazy when you think about how the voting works and how the selection process is.
Exactly, because, like, you even look at, like, going back to the Metro, Jack Hughes, great guy, but hasn't really played a lot, and he's now an All-Star. Chris Kreider, I love the guy, but, like, they have a guy named Artemi Panarin on the team, so I think he should have maybe made it. And, I mean, looking at Philly's year, I think they may be the biggest disappointment out of any team in the National Hockey League, but Claude Giroux, like, I love the guy, but, the way that they've been representing him for Philly and how he's going to get traded, and now he's representing Philly at the All-Star game, I think it's just silly just seeing that. So I think, like, I love those three players. Don't get me wrong. Giroux's an absolute legend, one of the best playmakers of this generation. But, like, guys like Kuznetsov, guys like Panarin, guys like Crosby not making this team, it's just like you have to, like, it's an All-Star game. You have to get the best players on the team. And I'm even looking at the D. Like, Adam Fox absolutely deserves to be there. But, like, Pelech and Werenski, come on. You could do a little better than that. And then the goalies are Freddie Anderson and Jari, and that's where I kind of agree. But then you look at Alino, the Atlantic, like, Bergeron is an All-Star this year? No, man.
Yeah, 2010.
Like, come on. No, I love Bergeron. Even Suzuki, I think he's going to be a great player, but he's not an All-Star this year. No ifs, ands, or buts. And even Rasmus Dahlin, a Buffalo Sabre, is an All-Star. Like, it hurts the value of the game, like you mentioned. I think, you know, you have to have Barkov here. You have to have Stamkos here for sure. Like, Hedman is a no-brainer. Vasilevsky and Campbell were obviously the no-brainers, but there's layups here, right?
Yeah, and even look at like Wes. I don't even think Tarasenko is St. Louis's pick there, or the guy that made it for St. Louis, which is crazy.
No, it's Kyrou.
Yeah, like he's had a nice year, but like, come on, Tarasenko not in there, and Kyrou is like. Tarasenko's had almost a point per game or more than a point per game, and even though he's been injured, he's still like turned his whole season around and he's back to that form he was a few years ago. So it's crazy that he's not in there. And like some of these picks, like Rasmus Dahlin, like come on, like he's a great player, but Buffalo is where they are. I don't think Dahlin would even mind missing the All-Star game.
Like at that point, if you're putting Dahlin in the All-Star game at this point, might as well just put Moritz Seider already in there for Detroit, because he's been just on a mission this year. But like here's another thing that really pisses me off, Alino. Cam Talbot, he has had a great year with Minnesota. They're top three in the Western Conference. But man, like you're telling me Patrick Kane is not an All-Star? Like, come on. Like Clayton Keller, Joe Pavelski, and Jordan Kyrou are All-Stars. Mikko Rantanen and Patrick Kane are not. It's just absolutely mind-boggling, man. Some of the selections they've done, I don't know if they're doing the divisional thing. I don't know, because I only saw two jerseys that they released. So I think they're just doing what East versus West this year, and they're just going to mix the lines from what we saw in the rosters. But, man, this is just disappointing. I'm not too thrilled about the All-Star game this year.
Yeah, me neither. I think they should, this is a year they should have just gone with something else. Maybe try something different. But yeah, like skills competition only. Don't even have an All-Star game. Just like bring all your best players and do it like that. Have the best skill players from each division come in and play for points. You don't even have the All-Star game and do like shootouts. Do like kind of like the other stuff they've done in the past. And whoever has the most points at the end of that one night wins All-Star game or wins All-Star weekend, and you have like a prize at the end of it for all the winners. And I think that's what they should have done with it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't really know what to expect moving forward with COVID and with the All-Star weekend, but I know it's in Vegas. Vegas is obviously running. They've always been running smoothly, but like just looking back at the way that they did it this year, and seeing some of the players even go on Twitter and kind of backlash the whole thing, like if it's starting to get into the players' mindsets that, you know, it's bothering them, then there's obviously a problem and a disconnect between management, owners like Gary Bettman, commissioners like Bettman and Bill Daly, and of course the players. Because you have to, like, again, we've always, I know, Alino, we do this a lot, we always try to compare the NBA and the NHL, and we try to make, you know, we want to make the NHL a little more entertaining. You know, they cut the suit and ties. Now they have a little more casual dress. I think the direction they're going, and it's better for guys like, for more old school guys like Gary Bettman. I think they have to start realizing that, you know, the athletes really do matter in their respected leagues. It's not necessarily always about ownership. So I think if players are going to, like Nathan MacKinnon, are going to start coming out and saying, hey, like, I love almost every player in the league. I respect a lot of them, but like, this is an All-Star game. It's not a participation game. You know, like he was definitely upset that guys like Kadri didn't make it. Rantanen didn't make it. So it's just unfortunate to see that, you know, superstar players like MacKinnon are coming out and, you know, they're visibly frustrated with the whole process. And we've seen in the past, like guys like Ovechkin, Crosby, they've just flat out refused to go. So, like, I don't know what else to really add to this, Alino, but do you think they should maybe have a little more strict, like, guidelines and rules with this game? Or do you think they're just going to stick with this whole participation type of way? Because I just don't see it working in the long run.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to just stick with it for now. But I think once they start talking with the players again, and I think their CBA was another 2 years because of COVID. Like, they agreed on that. But eventually, I think the NHLPA is going to talk with them, because they're obviously going to be mad about the Olympics. I think that was one of the reasons why they chose to extend it and then play in the bubble and everything. And they agreed, and it looked like they're all on the same page because they were going to get to go to the Olympics. But now that they're not going because of this latest like variant and all that, I think they'll probably try to do like a compromise there. They'll get the players more input on the All-Star game if they're more willing to like actually take part in it. And I think the NHL will get their World Cup of Hockey that they wanted for so long. So they'll make Gary Bettman happy, and then the PA will probably be happy at the end of it. But it's probably not going to be for another 2 or 3 years, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think as long as COVID is still kind of around, maybe they're not going to really change guidelines. But we got to now move on. We're going to go to the ring. You know, we've seen some very, very entertaining stuff from Brock Lesnar. You know, day one came and went really, really fast. I thought that pay-per-view was really, really solid. I thought the Fatal 5-Way was one of the better title matches of the year. It kind of gave me that triple threat at Royal Rumble 15 vibe, obviously adding two more people, but I just love the whole unpredictability of it. I thought Seth Rollins was going to win, and Brock Lesnar went out, and he ended up getting the pin and becoming the WWE champion. So he further kind of complicated the road to WrestleMania, but now that we've seen on SmackDown and Raw, it's looking a little bit more clear. Alino, I'm going to start this with you because this is a dream match that you've been wanting to see for a very, very long time. We've been talking about this since we basically started this pod way back in 2018. So we're getting it, buddy. At the Royal Rumble, we're getting Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar. We saw the first encounter, one-on-one, on the mic, on Raw. What did you think about it, and what do you think about this build for this match?
Yeah, Brock Lesnar's a fucking comedian all of a sudden, coming in with knock-knock jokes and saying that Bobby Lashley's a Brock wannabe, but like Lashley there, he gained like valid points there. Talking about Lesnar, like ever since he's been back, we've never really seen an interaction with those two, whether it be a Royal Rumble, which they were both in, any title match, even when they're on the same show. Like we got close to it when they did the whole Roman versus Lashley thing, but they still went with Roman at the end of it. So like it's really interesting that they had both of them on the same roster for so long and they never did anything creative with them. And now because of Roman Reigns testing positive for COVID that 1 week, everything changes, and now it was probably for the better. So now Roman and Seth, which is another match we've all like thought about, like if Roman's a heel, Seth's a heel in this new character, and Brock versus Bobby. So at the end of the day, like maybe it was a positive, like obviously you don't want the guy to get that, but it was a positive storyline wise and like you can still get to WrestleMania with those two matches, like Bobby versus Seth or whoever comes out of the Rumble, or and then Brock versus Roman, and you can still have these matches in between. So I think it's great on the way to WrestleMania.
Now here's the confusing thing with me, and like we all are probably assuming it's Brock and Roman at WrestleMania. Don't know what belt. That's the thing that's confusing me. Who do you see dropping the belt? Do you see Brock Roman, or do you see a guy like Heyman maybe screwing Brock over against Bobby? Because, man, like I've seen kind of both articles on the internet. I've seen one where they think Heyman's going to double-cross Brock and cost Reigns retain his Universal title and have Brock versus Roman for the Universal title. But apparently they want the Universal title back on – like apparently Fox wants the Universal title on Raw, and they want the WWE title on SmackDown. So do you see Roman Reigns potentially losing his Universal title to Seth Rollins, or do you think they're going to protect that reign and make Brock a transitional champ?
Yeah, if Roman had the title for like 4 months, let's say, I'd say Roman. But because he's had it for, I think, almost 2 years, like going up in August will be 2 years, I think they'll probably lean more towards having Roman as a champ for now. Because Brock, I think he's been full time basically since he returned, and I don't think they want to use I don't think they want to use all those dates off his contract right away. So I think Brock will probably drop the title, be a transitional guy. Heyman will probably lead to the turn on him, and Lesnar will be in the chamber match and get the match there on SmackDown again. But like for now, I'd rather see Roman retain and go into WrestleMania as a champ.
Yeah, dude, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think I've ever – I was saying this to Collab the other day because I hung out with him and we were talking about the last – basically since 2012. So this is going to be the 10th Rumble that I've been watching consistently with like – you, Collab, Pinello, like those type of guys. So I said to him, I'm like, you know, like this is Sheamus's 10th anniversary since winning. Can we see a potential like surprise where we see maybe Sheamus win the Royal Rumble, or do you think, because man, if we're thinking the same way, because I kind of agree with what you said with where I think Roman's held it for so long that even though it is Seth Rollins, I think Reigns is going to hold on to the belt at least till Mania or whenever they want to drop this legendary run, because I feel like they're comparing this run to I don't want to say they're trying to like discredit or like just completely forget about CM Punk's run that he had, but I feel like they're just kind of trying to make it like that, very similar to it, and maybe kind of even like Brock Lesnar's Universal run when he held it for like 500 plus days. So regardless of how long he holds it, I do think it's Brock versus Roman at Mania. I think that's a given at this point. I'm just, the thing that makes me so surprised and excited, Alino, is just, I don't really know who's going to go into WrestleMania as the WWE champion. And I have no idea. I mean, if Roman and Brock is so for certain, I don't know who is winning the Royal Rumble. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing too, because like every year it seems like it's so predictable. Like when it was Seth that one year, that was really predictable. Even though Drew the next year was a nice story, but like I think that they lost their unpredictability about it. Like 2018 was, or 2016 when Triple H won, that was kind of like out there, but I think that's what they need. Like maybe it opens up like a Walter coming in, doing damage in the Rumble and getting a match at WrestleMania with Lashley, or maybe Seth wins it after losing to Roman and we see him go on and face Lashley. So I like how there's a lot of possibilities about it, which like past couple years, it seems like the women's match has only been the one with unpredictable endings.
Now, I want to just continue talking about this because we're probably just going to finish with this. It's going to be a short one today, but like there's so many possibilities. And if Seth Rollins were to win the Royal Rumble, let's say he puts on a 22-minute great unreal match with Roman, comes up short, goes in the Rumble, wins it. Do you see Seth Rollins, because I know that I think they want to turn him face and I think they want him to be one of the big top faces again. Can you see a guy like Seth Rollins maybe creeping his way into the Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns feud on a constant night and maybe insert himself as a triple threat? Because man, I think what they did last year with Daniel Bryan, Edge and Roman, I think they got to maybe do another triple threat again this year, because last year was just incredible, and I think they want to re-up that sell again. So I wouldn't be surprised if Seth were to win the Rumble, a triple threat at Mania.
Yeah, and I think this would actually make more sense than the one last year. Like Daniel Bryan got thrown into it kind of last minute, and it really, like Edge and Roman had a good program, but I think they wanted to protect Edge a little bit, and they ended up doing that and having him feud with Roman a little bit later at Money in the Bank. So I see like that other WrestleMania match that Roman and Brock had at 31 when Rollins came in and cashed in. I think it'd be like unfinished business. Now you get to see all three of them in the same ring at the same time at Mania, and then they can use that as bragging rights. Like now we're going to see who would have won that match if they were all in the ring at the same time. So I like that idea better than as if like another Brock Roman match one-on-one. I think it's already been done so many times.
And like, it's a shame to even talk about Big E at this point, because like, man, I love the guy's run. I love when he won the Money in the Bank. I think, I don't know if it was me or it was you. I think I called it though. Cause I remember I called, what's her name there? What's her name there? The one that's a superhero now. Nikki Cross. Yeah, I called her winning the Money in the Bank. But like, dude, if Bobby Lashley wins and Big E wins the Royal Rumble, like, is that an underwhelming win? As much as we love and praise Big E, I just feel like if he were to win, he wouldn't really get that pop, would he?
Yeah, like, it depends how he does it. Like, I'm with you on that. Like, I think it would all come down to who's in the ring with him. If it's like a heel that no one wants to see win the match, I can see them like rally behind him. But I think there's more to gain with him just facing Goldberg in a like attraction match on the first night, middle of the card. You can have like a 5-10 minute match, Goldberg's last match on this deal. So unless he signs a new contract, like this one would probably be more meaningful. So I think they should go that route than having him go in the Rumble, come up short, and maybe get a title match with Bobby, which he probably won't win because It looks like they have bigger plans for Lashley and Rollins down the road, so I think they should go the Goldberg direction with Big E.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard, too, to like kind of pinpoint where the Goldberg Big E is going to maybe start. I know you said that he's talked about wanting to face Goldberg before. Like, do you see Goldberg basically coming in the Rumble, or do you think it's more of like a random return from Goldberg, like after the Rumble night, like on Raw, and saying, "Hey, Big E, I'm impressed with you, kid. Like, I want to face you at Mania. You in?" Like, do you see it being like a face versus face? Because I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, as intriguing and cool and like it being kind of like a dream match for like the really younger kids in the crowd, and then like the guys like us who've seen Goldberg over the years, like it's kind of a dream match. But I feel like at that point in time, if you're doing Goldberg and Big E at this stage in Big E's career, I think, man, honestly, as funny as it sounds, I think this is the time where you pull the trigger on a Goldberg heel turn. Because you know how much he's already hated? Can you imagine the heat he would get going to the ring? Like, just picture that for a second. Goldberg versus Big E with Goldberg as the heel. Man, that would be that'd be solid for a guy like Big E, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I remember, like, I think it was when he was supposed to face Roman, and they kind of had people booing him because he beat The Fiend. He ended that run, and I think that's a time when Goldberg, they should have just ran with it. Just give him lines to say, like, yeah, you know all your heroes? I was in WCW just running the show there, beating all your heroes, and hated this company. And now that I'm the champ, I want to continue doing that. Just mention Bret Hart, how he ended his career. That would get people pissed off even more. So I think they should pull the trigger on that. Maybe come out, like, respect Big E, then spear him and just say he hates everything about him and he's going to beat him at Mania. So I think they should go in that direction. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, man, I agree too. Like, and again, we're looking at Raw and there's not a lot of top faces too. I think that's where the biggest problem lies. I think the force, like, WWE is basically, and they put themselves in a corner if you look at Raw and you look at the way that they've built the show. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Randy Orton and Matt Riddle are the best tag team in professional wrestling as of right now. Like, they're the most well-known. And, that's a problem because you look at the singles competitors, and if Bobby Lashley right now is your top face, or Brock Lesnar, I guess, like, it's great, but you need guys that are going to fill those open spots. And guys like Sheamus, I think, could be a really valuable face moving forward. I think if you put Cesaro on Raw, he can maybe do some damage. I just feel like it's just the positioning that they put themselves in post-draft that always kind of bites them in the ass. And now, again, like, we're not creative. I don't really know the process of it, but like, they have been doing that a lot recently, where you look at like SmackDown and Raw, and it's like, that guy would be better on Raw at this point in time. Like last year or 2 years ago, remember when Goldberg won the freaking title and then they had Strowman go up against him? I'm like, are you kidding me, man? You can't have Strowman versus Goldberg at WrestleMania. That's just not going to cut it for anybody. And unfortunately, you know, it happened, and it was like a 5-minute brutal match. And that was basically the burial of The Fiend. So you get in these predicaments, but there's guys like Sheamus and AJ Styles who, as great as they are heels and as long as they've been heels, like, this, I think, is a time where they should understand, and even Vince should understand, time is ticking for them. Maybe not Sheamus because he's still freaking rolling, but like, AJ Styles hasn't really been as relevant since the Undertaker feud. Like you mentioned, I think it was a couple weeks ago when you said the last time he literally was at that top, main event type level was 2020. What was it? 2020 when he faced Undertaker. So like, it's been a while now. Alino, like, out of those three guys I mentioned, who do you think would be the best top face on Raw right now? Cesaro, Sheamus, or AJ?
I think AJ, just because, like, he's actually been a heel a lot longer than I thought he was going to be a heel. Like, since he turned, like, I'm surprised they haven't turned a back face again. Like, he had some moments where you could turn him, but I think the thing with Omos, like, they didn't even clearly say who was going to be the face of that, and now it looks like it is going to be Omos, so I think they got to take advantage of that. AJ, everyone loves him. Like, have him come out, have the best match of the night, put him in the world title picture, and just roll with him, because it's been a tag guy for so long. I think it was a little underwhelming at times because he's a guy that shouldn't be doing that for the amount of time he did. It should have been a short-term thing at the draft, change brands. You don't have to do the whole split where the guy turns on one, just split them up in the draft, and I think they missed an opportunity there.
I agree, too. Like, I'm always a big fan of Sheamus, but like you just mentioned, they've had numerous opportunities to have AJ turn face, and just kind of like, why haven't you? And I love almost, like, the story's cool. Like, he's really big. But that's the guy where you could kind of pave him into a Mark Henry as that mega heel that, like, you can't be stopped. And AJ could be the guy where it's like, yeah, you know what? I've been here. I'm a multi-time WWE champion. I know what it takes. But let me be that, you know, that underdog babyface for a bit like Brian was. Because I feel like if AJ is in that mode, feuding with guys like Lashley and feuding with guys like maybe Seth Rollins or, you know, Kevin Owens down the line, like, that's huge. Like, can you imagine Kevin Owens, AJ for the belt? Like, these are things that I don't understand. I don't know if it's just the alignment. I don't know if they don't want to do it. But, like, these are matches that we need to see before guys like AJ hang them up, at least for the main belt. Like, we saw AJ versus Owens and Sami Zayn that one year at the Rumble, but, like, I don't count that. Like, I want to see that at, like, a main show and have 25 minutes. But, again, Alina, we're internet fans. We don't usually get what we want, so I don't really know if that's ever going to happen. But, like, AJ Styles has to turn face ASAP. It bothers me that he still is a heel, to be honest. But I want to quickly talk about two guys in this match. We always talk about them, but we talk about them in a goofy way, Alino. I'm talking about Dominic and Rey. Now, they're both in the Rumble. They both announced it. Is it safe to say that one of them is throwing the other over to build a match of Mania? Or do you see them just sticking together the whole time?
I want to see Dominic accidentally eliminate his dad. Like, maybe Ray's on the turnbuckle or something. He's like, oh, yeah, let's do this tag move. And then Dominic, being, like, clumsy or something, pushes his dad off. And then Ray just gets back in the ring and beats the shit out of his kid and throws him over the ropes. That's what I want to see. Just Ray just lose it. Make that the story of the match. Have people on commentary like Michael Cole, who've known him for years, just like, why, Ray? What are you doing? Have Ray go up to him and tell him to shut up and then leave. But probably not going to happen. Dominic's just going to throw him over, and that's going to start the heel turn.
Yeah, man. Like, that was... I love the Rumble for shit like that. Like, we've seen so many programs start at the Rumble and go to Mania. I think you have to do it. I mean, I don't know when Ray's retiring. I don't know if he ever is. Like, you look at his body and the way he's been training the last couple of years. Like, you could tell he's more motivated probably than ever before. But now that I think he's wrestled a couple years with his son, I think he's starting to kind of realize, like, you know what? I'm not going to be here forever. Like, I think this is where maybe, I don't want to say this year, but I want to say maybe the next couple years, kind of like when Kurt Angle came back, and I think they gave him, what, it was like 14 months, and then he had his match and retired. I think they're going to do the same thing with Ray, man, in the next, like, 18 months. I want to say by maybe the end of 2023, Ray Mysterio might not be wrestling anymore, so... I feel like if they're going to do something like that and they're you know, they're preparing for it, I think you need to kind of start building a little build between Dominic and Ray, because, like, it's too good to pass up. You know what I mean? They're like, Ray's legacy is huge, and I think they have to do this for even for Dominic's improvement. I think they have to. So I agree with that. I want to see Dominic accidentally, you know, cost Ray and maybe have Ray have a little bit of a meltdown, maybe get the pipe like when he did that to Brock. So that would be absolutely hilarious. But another name that I want to talk about is Drew McIntyre, because we saw him have a meaningless match at day one. We basically said before the pay-per-view, before day one, that he was arguably a Rumble favorite. Alina, where do you have Drew McIntyre right now in the fold of WWE? Do you have him maybe being on the back burner, or would you not be surprised if Drew McIntyre possibly had a world title bout at WrestleMania?
Yeah, like... I think before that, like, I would have said easily he's winning the Rumble. The way they built him up, like, they really haven't had him and Roman, like, too often on TV when they're on the same show, so I like that. But I think because he got injured and they just rode him out in a meaningless match at day one with Corbin and Moss there, like, I don't know if they'll have him back in time, unfortunately. So, like, if he could come back at the Chamber, maybe... he ends up getting a match and they'll insert him with Lashley if it makes sense. But because he's on SmackDown, and I don't think he'll have a good good opportunity there. So unfortunately, this year I would say Drew's probably going to be at best in the middle of the card.
Like, Ali, you know, this is tough to say to put you on the spot, but like, we've seen guys like, you know, Daniel Bryan get inserted into like mega storylines. Do you see anybody playing that role this year in terms of baby faces? Like, do you see a top face like Seth Rollins maybe doing that? Do you see a guy like Drew or Big E? Like, do you see any of them maybe carrying that much weight as a face, or do you think they're just full on right now with Brock Lesnar?
I think Edge might be the guy, because I don't know. I think that whole mixed tag match, it can go either way, like positive or negative. Like we saw when Miz faced John Cena, they pretty much Cena that win back from the other Mania, wrote it into a reality show, and look how good that turned out. So I think this one might be a little bit better, because Beth Phoenix and Maryse might actually like try to have a better match. But like long term with both those guys, I think Edge could be the one that goes on to like the world title. But you need something for Miz, because like he's good at getting his opponent who's not really over, get over. And I think they're going to miss an opportunity if that match doesn't go well.
Now, here is the beauty of the Miz, I think, at this point, man. And hear me out on this. I predict that this is going to happen. And remember this podcast. I think that they're building the Miz to win the United States title at WrestleMania. And I think they're only doing that because they now know that John Morrison is gone. They know that Bad Bunny's gone. It's like they're kind of, like, it's not lazy by any means. It's just, I feel like they don't really know what to do with Damian Priest, because like I mentioned to you, I want to say it was in November. He was one of those guys when, you know, he's holding the United States title and Shinsuke's holding the Intercontinental title. And if you have to pick one of the two that like had more momentum at the time, it's obviously Damian Priest. Like he was flip-flopping, teasing, turning heel at one point, and now he's a face. And he's been one of the breakout stars of 2021, no doubt about it. But like, I just don't see The Miz right now being in that same level. Like obviously, if him facing Edge, if it's at if this feud goes to WrestleMania, I don't think it is. But if it does, like that's better than him being in the United States title picture. But at this point in time, man, you're looking at like I was just talking to you about who the hell is the top face on Raw. Like Damian Priest at this point in time, like he's a face, but he's not big enough. So I feel like at this point in time, maybe have The Miz just go up against Damian Priest just to build Priest's credibility, but just to have The Miz snatch it and have him get another championship. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would like it. The U.S. title needs, Miz. I think he would make it relevant, but I think he should actually, if there's a guy, like we were talking about before, going to SmackDown and changing brands, Miz goes to SmackDown, beats Shinsuke for the Intercontinental title that we never see, and maybe he brings that to relevancy again, because that title seems like an afterthought on TV.